Welcome to The Dyad Presents, a video game music podcast. I'm The Dyad, and these aren't even video games. Lurking in unseen corners of system BIOS menus and niche peripheral loading screens are some of the best music console gaming has to offer. This episode is going to focus on video game music that isn't. It's a pretty broad theme, but I wanted to catch as much as possible. In fact, some of these curiosities can and will earn their own full episodes down the line, but you'll see what I mean as we go. For example, bringing us in this week is the menu theme from the Nintendo Power Flash cartridge for the Game Boy Color. Unaffiliated with the official American magazines, the Japanese Nintendo Power offered a copying service akin to Famicom disc writer kiosks of the 1980s. Starting in 1997, and available for both the Super Famicom and Game Boy, Nintendo Power operated game kiosks which sold official Nintendo Flash cartridges for 2,500 yen. For a measly 800 yen and a trip to the Lawson department store, gamers could copy game data directly onto their carts. And for a quick conversion, that's about $25 for the carts, and games were a little under 10. A user would first purchase the RAM cartridge itself, then bring it to a store that had a Nintendo Power copier. The cartridges could hold more than one game, or be completely rewritten with new games as you pleased. The Super Famicom version was sliced up to allow up to 7 games at once, depending on the size. In addition, the store would provide the purchaser with a printed copy of the manual for the game. Game prices varied, and generally speaking, older games were a little bit cheaper than new ones. Nintendo Power exclusives were even more expensive. That's right, approximately 24 games were released exclusively for the Flash carts. Obviously, they aren't going to be household names, but there are a few familiar titles. For example, Wrecking Crew 98, the sequel to one of the first Proto Mario games, Kirby Kira Kira Kids, aka Kirby Super Stacker, which was given a standard cartridge release a year later, 10 Picross games, and a Fire Emblem title, Fire Emblem Thracia 776. As far as I know, I think the Fire Emblem title may have seen a Japanese Wii Virtual Console release. It's still pretty rare, And even that was, what, a decade after the original game came out? While no longer operating, the service ran for an impressive 10 years, finally shutting down on February 28, 2007. This is especially impressive considering how late it appeared in the Super Famicom lifecycle. And even after the end of the convenience store service, Nintendo set up a special order procedure via its customer service window. Owners could send in requests along with their flash cartridge and get the new games shipped to them in 5 to 7 business days. Somewhat relatedly, and a little more than I wanted to cover on the show, in 2003, Nintendo launched another official flash cart service, this time in China. Called the IQ, spelled I-Q-U-E, it had 14 Nintendo 64 games compatible with it. Call this a footnote to the episode because I doubt I'll ever have a call to talk about it again. It looked kind of like a Dreamcast controller, just like a big disc-looking thing. I didn't research it too much because they're just standard Nintendo 64 games, but I thought it was interesting and worth mentioning at the very least. Anyway, while the kiosks and service are now gone, the cartridges still remain in the wild. I encountered a number of forum posts with owners looking for ways to load games onto their secondhand flash carts. Not to mention the secondhand market itself. Imagine owning a legitimate Nintendo-approved SNES cart that had 7 games on it. I've seen some reasonably priced auctions on eBay, like in the $50 range, but I don't know if you can really verify which games are slotted before buying one. One enterprising internet dude is trying to reverse engineer the Game Boy cart. I guess by doing so, he hopes to be able to load the games in a semi-legitimate way. I'll link to his website on the post for the show just because I think it's interesting, but at that point it might be better to just grab a Chinese R4 cart. I guess we all have to draw our own retro gaming insane person line in the sand somewhere. I'm going to be spending actually a fairly sizable chunk of the show talking about these sort of digital downloads in their earliest state. I'm going to take a short break though and stick with the Game Boy for a little bit and talk about a Game Boy peripheral. From the Game Boy camera, composed by Hirokazu Hip Tanaka from the credits theme, aka Livin' in Your Town. Game Boy Camera is the second most popular Game Boy peripheral behind only the Game Boy Sonar. No, not really, but again, when will I ever be able to talk about the Game Boy Sonar? Made by Bandai, it could locate fish up to 65 feet underwater. It was used for fishing and even contained its own fishing minigame. And it holds the remarkable Guinness Book of World Records record for being the first sonar-enabled gaming accessory. But the sonar isn't the only Guinness-winning Game Boy add-in. The Game Boy camera appeared in the 1999 edition of the Guinness World Records for being the world's smallest digital camera. And if you weren't part of the zeitgeist in early 90s, perhaps your ability to parse English can clue you in. This is a camera for your Game Boy. The Game Boy camera is a small eyeball-sized camera mounted on top of a game cartridge with an optional printer. When plugged into the Game Boy, the camera takes medium resolution pictures of 128 by 123 pixels and supports a wide variety of graphic processing capability with an included ROM chip inside the camera cartridge. For an interesting article and where I got a lot of this crunchy bit information from, originally appearing in the June 1999 issue of The Robot Builder, the author talked about how robotics hobbyists were buying the extremely cheap cameras to harvest the parts and integrate into their home contraptions, effectively adding vision to their robots for only about 50 bucks. As for the music we're listening to, it comes from the credits to the Game Boy camera. But for those familiar with Hip Tanaka's earlier scores, the theme may be recognizable. Livin' in Your Town is a blend of two previous tracks that he worked on. The first is from Twinkle Elementary School, a theme from the game Mother, and the second is the file select theme of the game Earthbound. I need to pick up the pace or I'm never going to get through this stuff, so let's move on. Next up, from the RandNet DD, appearing on the N64 DD, this track is called the RandNet Server. Oh, and I should mention, a lot of these tracks I just couldn't find any composer information on. Some of them I'm doing best guesses on, but for something like this that I don't even think was released, you're just going to have to go with Mr. Unknown. Somewhat confusingly, I'm handling the next few tracks in reverse chronological order. And I'll be starting with the 64DD, or Dynamic Drive. It was a controversial disk drive add-on announced by Nintendo in 1995. The announcement came just before the release of the N64, and after years of complications and delays, was released exclusively in Japan on December 1st, 1999. I think there's more than enough content there to fill its own episode, so I'm gonna narrow the scope to just RandNet DD. RandNet was started in December of 1999 as a way to present a new way of playing games over networks. Nintendo partnered with Japanese media company Recruit to develop the 64DD's complete new proprietary online service called RandNet, a portmanteau of Recruit and Nintendo Network. An evolution of the Satellaview, more on that next, the RandNet service allowed gamers to browse the internet, including a members-only portal, and to share game data. For a subscription fee, RandNet included dial-up internet service, 64DD system hardware, and a delivery schedule of game discs by mail. More ambitiously, there was originally planned multiplayer online gaming. But due to delays in the development of anticipated content, the growth in membership was extremely slow. Also, due to the appearance of other next-gen consoles, it was even more difficult to keep the system afloat. RandNet lasted only until February 28, 2001. From what I read, the music we're listening to now plays when you're connecting to the RandNet server. It's a little hard to verify, but it makes sense from what I saw. Moving on, I mentioned the Satellaview, which is another early Nintendo internet peripheral. And next up is a Satellaview double feature. From the Satellaview BSX application cartridge, first is the error screen, followed by download 3. The Nintendo Satellaview, or Broadcast Satellaview X, or BSX, was a game and news delivery add-on for the Super Famicom. It made use of a satellite modem, which was the source of the add-on's name. Exclusive to the Super Famicom, the games and content were only released in Japan. It wasn't truly a console, but more of a robust add-on. Released in 1995, the Satellaview was one of the earliest attempts to utilize downloadable content on a console. Nintendo partnered with a Japanese satellite radio company called Saint Giga, which in turn was a subsidiary of the satellite TV station Wow Wow. After paying a subscription fee and purchasing the hardware, a player could connect to Saint Giga between the hours of 4 to 7 p.m. and download games and news. Some games could only be played at certain times, and others could be downloaded to the BSX cassette. It even featured some Satellaview exclusives. The most popular title has to be Radical Dreamers, but there were also a trilogy of Zelda games, among others. To actually connect to the service, you needed to insert a Super Game Boy-sized SNES cartridge, which contained an application. To those unfamiliar, picture a slightly taller SNES game. This cartridge acted as the system's interface, but in the guise of a video game. Called BSX Soreha Namai o Nusumareta Machi no Monogatari, or The Story of the Town Whose Name Has Been Stolen, the player would choose an avatar and navigate houses and shops in an RPG town-style map. The locations served as download hubs where the player could directly download games, game data, or digital magazines. The download would write game data into temporary memory locations, which would remain until the player downloaded a new game to take its place. Despite acting in a largely utilitarian function, The Town Whose Name Has Been Stolen had a loose plot and even a game framework. You could spend in-game money on things like dash shoes, which let your avatar move faster. On top of that, a series of semi-sequel games were released set in the same town. They featured two Satellaview mascots, an anthropomorphized satellite and satellite dish called Satebo and Parabo. Saint Giga broadcast Satellaview material every day between April 23, 1995 and June 30, 2000. And it seems like it may have continued to do so even later, but a falling out between Nintendo and Saint Giga terminated their partnership in 1999. Nintendo wasn't the only company experimenting with downloadable content, though. Next is another double set. First, and sorry Sega CD, I'm gonna kinda skip over the majority of the info on you, is the Sega CD console startup music from the Model 1 Sega CD. But then after that, the intro music to the Sega Channel. The Sega Channel was yet another online game service, this time developed by Sega for the Genesis video game console. It served as a content delivery system. But despite the fact that I'm talking about it last in this list, launching in December 1994, Sega Channel was the first of its kind, not counting a failed attempt by the Intellivision anyway. It was amazingly ahead of its time, and a survey of the current gaming landscape makes a 22-year-old innovation like the Sega Channel all the more impressive. Sega Channel was provided through cable television services through coaxial cable. It was, like the rest, a pay-to-play service, and after submitting a subscription and setup fee, customers could access Genesis games online, play game demos, and even get cheat codes. The Sega Channel ran for 3 years after the release of Sega's next generation console, the Saturn, but officially shuttered on July 31st, 1998. What is basically par for the course for Sega, it was thoroughly criticized for its poorly timed launch. It was also dinged for its high subscription fees, but 50 games for $15 a month seems pretty reasonable by today's standards. And as with all the other download services, Sega Channel had some exclusives, or versions of games not available in America otherwise, for example, Alien Soldier. While its legacy is a bit spotty nowadays, the Sega Channel was praised for its innovations in downloadable content and its impact on online services for video games. And one last tidbit I wanted to include, although I couldn't really exactly verify it. According to an article by Ken Horowitz, an August 1995 omnibus survey by Sports Illustrated magazine found that kids between ages of 9 and 13 were 5 times as likely to subscribe to the Sega Channel than to purchase the Saturn, N64, or Atari Jaguar. And only 1 in 20 said that they would rather buy the Sony PlayStation. Honestly, that almost raises more questions than it answers, but I thought it was pretty interesting at least. Anyway, I'm going to end the show today with one of the biggest areas of this type of music, eShop themes. The Nintendo eShop, PlayStation Store, Virtual Console, all that stuff nowadays has its own background music, usually pleasant, sometimes evocative of like the 50s shopping music you might hear, or maybe something in a Ren and Stimpy episode. I was going to include more originally, but I thought it would be kind of cool to talk briefly on the 3 different downloadable content services I mentioned. In any event, surprisingly, there is enough content here to fill up another episode or two, and so maybe I'll do another sequel or just throw some of these tracks in as I kind of go through my other free play episodes. Before I go, as always, special thanks to Alan Euler, aka Periodical, for mixing and editing the show. You can follow the show at thedyadpresents.blogspot.com, where I also post the track list for the show. You can subscribe via your favorite podcatcher, and don't forget to rate the show on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at thedyad, and you can email me at thedyadpresents@gmail.com. There's a Facebook page and group you can find by searching for the name of the podcast or by @TheDyad. Until next time, composed by, I think, Toru Minegishi, from the Nintendo Wii, the Nintendo eShop music from September 2013.
Thank you.